Now, there's a growing wave of concerns or calls calling for proposals to ban heading a ball in football, particularly when it comes to kids under the age of 12. This is something that the Scottish Football Association has been considering because of the links of heading a ball and its links to concussions. The United States has had similar restrictions in place since 2015, and there has already been research by University College London and Cardiff University looking at the impact of heading a very, very hard soccer ball and the increased risk of dementia later in life. This has been a conversation of concussions in sport, of looking at NFL, American football, as well as rugby in South Africa. Professor John Patricius is the founder and director of the Sports Concussion of South Africa. He joins us on the line from Johannesburg. Professor, I know you've dealt a lot with looking at concussions in rugby, particularly also school child rugby. Has there been plenty of or enough research being done on concussions when it comes to football or soccer?
Yes, good morning firstly to you and your listeners, and thanks for having me on your show. I think your opening comments were quite right, that this is part of a growing body of research in the area, starting with the collision sports like rugby and NFL, and now extending into other contact type sports like soccer. Mm. So to answer you directly, absolutely not. There has not been enough research done. And that leaves a lot of doubt in our minds, as to what the actual effects of contact are on the head and on the young player's head, both in terms of collision and in heading the ball. Mm. And I think the Scottish study to which you're referring actually highlights that point. And it says, although they found an increased rate of dementia in ex-Scottish footballers, they could not establish a direct link between heading the ball and the dementias. So there's a big gap between what happens when playing football at any age and what's happening when they're discovering these dementias the decades down the line. And we haven't filled that gap yet. So there's a lot more work that needs to go into it. And the last thing we want is people stopping playing sport because they're worried that they're going to have dementia down the line. That's certainly not the case. Mm. The advantages of playing soccer far outweigh the risks. And so we've got to be very careful in how we interpret this research. It's really part of a body of research which is helping point us in a direction where we will eventually be able to hopefully draw more definitive conclusions.
We see, you mentioned football as a contact sport. Yes, there's definitely bodily and physical engagement, but you're passing around the ball. It's majority with your feet and parts of your body. But, you know, I remember playing, and we've pumped up a soccer ball, and if a ball is coming sort of dropping vertically and you sort of want, you know, jump and defend, the ball, I have been left, you know, a bit dizzy after heading a ball, and it feels much harder, you know, landing, you know, on the top of your head than, you know, passing or kicking it and trying to kick it into goal.
Sure. And so you might feel a little bit of discomfort, but the honest truth is we don't know what forces are being transmitted to the brain in that scenario and whether or not it's doing any harm, either at the time or down the line. Some other interesting issues around the heading of the ball. It's a very controlled activity, so you actually prepare for it, brace the neck muscles, and so the inertia, the degree of movement of the head on the neck is actually restricted. And it's very different to, for instance, a ball coming and blindsiding a player and catching him or her on the head, which is far more serious because the neck is not braced to protect the head. Mm. The other point is that over the years, the technology has changed, so the footballs, particularly at a younger age, have become much lighter. Those old heavy leather footballs that absorbed all the water in the old days have changed and evolved. So there have been changes which have mitigated the risk. But the fact is that we're not sure, and we're researching, and hopefully we will find the answers to these questions.
But we also have new balls that move at much higher velocities. They skim off the turf. They shoot off your foot. Is that then also a measure for concern? Balls that are traveling at much faster rates than we are, with old miters that we used to play with 10, 20 years ago.
Sure. In any collision, it's the mass and the acceleration, which are the two factors that are going to determine the nature of the force. So that does have a role to play. But nevertheless, again, with the controlled heading activity, it certainly reduces the risk. Mm. And I'd just be loath to sort of set alarm bells off saying that headering the soccer ball has resulted in this generation of demented ex-footballers. I think that's an exaggeration. It's two or three steps too far down the line. Just as an example, there are different causes of dementia, some of which may be related to contact in sport and some not. So it might be the lifestyle choices of the footballers, alcohol, drugs, smoking, that sort of thing may also down the line lead to some of these changes. And we haven't made those associations yet. We're not sure exactly. Having said that, I think you're right. Should a 6 or 8 year old be practicing headering the ball 100, 200 times each practice? The answer is probably not. So we should be restricting that exposure, teaching technique, etc., and then gradually, introducing it in the latter phases. I think that would be a sensible, measured approach without provoking too much panic.
Definitely, and we're not trying to provoke panic. And as you said, we rather want to encourage young people to participate in sport, which is, as far more beneficial, is far more beneficial to them than possible injury. But what is it for a young growing body? Can you get used to sort of physical contact? Could I condition my body to take hits in rugby, or condition, maybe use the soccer example of condition my body that it gets used to hitting a ball that, if I do then play later in life, my body is essentially used to that, and I've conditioned myself to take these impacts and these knocks?
So you can't condition the brain to taking impact, but you can certainly protect the brain in various ways, which is what you're alluding to. Mm-hmm. So there's various ways you can do that. The first is physical conditioning, so improving your fitness, reaction times, and strength, and looking at strengthening areas which traditionally we wouldn't strengthen, like the neck. Mm. Now, the neck muscles are an area that's usually ignored, and rugby, through South African Rugby's Box Smart program, has now realized how important it is to strengthen the neck muscles, and that's become fairly standard part of rugby conditioning, and perhaps football, soccer could learn from that as well. The second area is technique, so teaching the correct technique, skills, how to brace for tackles, how to brace for headers, etc. And the third important factor, which is shown to be hugely influential, is playing within the laws of the game, so marshalling the game correctly and making sure that those illegal tackles don't increase the risk of contact to the head. And in fact, most concussions in soccer occur not from the ball hitting the head, but from player-to-player contact. So that would be head-to-head, elbow-to-head, or head-to-ground. So those are important things to bear in mind. And FIFA, about a decade or so ago, changed the rules in terms of leading with your elbow when contesting for the ball. Mm. And that significantly reduced the rate of concussions in soccer, as you had fewer head-to-elbow contacts. And those are the types of important interventions that we need to keep looking at, because they make a significant difference.
Professor John Fabricius is the founder and director of Sports Concussion in South Africa. We have a few calls coming in. Nick in Kales River, you have a question for the professor.
Good morning to you and your professor. The question I'm asking is that if there's an investigation going on under, for example, soccer and rugby, what about boxing? Boxing is 10, 12 rounds of constant impact with punching with your hand onto the head. Well, the objective is to try and knock the person out.
Valid point there, Nick in Kales River.
Yeah, exactly. That's an excellent point. And in fact, the first cases of these dementias were found in boxes. And you will have heard of perhaps a condition called dementia pugilistica, which is really describing exactly this. It's retired boxes with the dementia or the Muhammad Ali Parkinsonism type syndrome. So absolutely, I mean, we know that those types of blows to the head over a sustained period will cause some damage. The question is, you know, do you voluntarily want to subject yourself to that? Boxing has made some changes in terms of the frequency of fighting, in terms of the medical personnel and support around fights, but by its very nature, you know, you're deliberately trying to cause damage to somebody's brain. That's the reality of boxing. And I suppose one needs to make an educated choice as to whether one wants to do that or not.
We're essentially talking about sport in controlled environments, whether it be schoolboys or school children's sport, or whether we talk about club sport or semi-professional sport. But what then should we do, Professor, if I'm playing a social game of football, a social game of rugby? It's uncontrolled. Usually there isn't even a referee. Things get heated, elbow to the head or maybe even an errant tackle here and there, and I get knocked to the floor. What should I be doing then to protect myself? Do I need to go? There's not a concussion assessment on every little park and field around the country. So how do I know whether I should be maybe going to an ER just to go check if this knock that I took to the head could be a concussion?
Well, look, there's a little maxim in it: if in doubt, sit it out, and certainly if in doubt, check it out. I mean, the question is rather be overcautious. Go and see a medical doctor of some sort, whether it's your doctor or an ER. That's the first thing. Is if you've had a knock and you're symptomatic from it, you've got headaches, you're a bit dizzy, you're confused, whatever, have it checked out. That's very important. The second piece of advice is with South African rugby, we've now put a network of doctors together around the country that have expertise in concussion, and they're quite easily accessible. So if you go to the sportsconcussion.co.za website, you will see the contact list of about 50 doctors around the country who have expertise in it. Or drop us an email and let's give you some advice and point you in the right direction. But before undertaking sport again, partaking in sport again, make sure that you have a medical opinion as to whether it's appropriate and when it's appropriate. Absolutely.
Before we have parents concerned and parents worried, and also then parents going out and buying all the best pads to protect, you know, little Johnny or Susie who's taking up, you know, touch rugby at school. They're only 5, 6 years old. Should we be having, I know it should be in the best interest of the child and the young sports person, but what message do we send out if, you know, we have a kid who's coming out playing, you know, little league, first time sport, contact sport, and they come out with shoulder pads and helmets? Is this the right message, or should we just be allowing kids to be playing freely for now and even maybe run the risk of taking the odd knock here and there? Because after all, this is what growing up is all about.
So this is an area that South African sports medicine and rugby in particular has taken a lead. And so BoxSmart has put in place, that's South African Rugby's injury prevention program, BoxSmart, a number of steps to try and protect rugby players of all ages. So equipment is part of the process, but essentially it's a phased approach of restricting competition within age bands, so not having youngsters playing against older boys or teenagers playing against adults, for instance, the whole conditioning aspect. And then very importantly, and this is unique in the world, every coach and every referee at every level of the game in rugby, whether it's a local club under 9C team or whether it's the national coach, has to undergo this BoxSmart training program every 2 years, where they're taught about recognizing potentially serious injuries, what to do about them, how to condition players, etc., and to put a network around them to help them help protect their players. So rugby, in terms of the care for our players, is the safest it's ever been, thanks to interventions such as this. And I think other sports are following suit. And again, the emphasis should be on participation, having fun, certainly at very young ages, taking that very competitive edge out of it, because the benefits of exercise at any age far outweigh the risks.
Professor John Patricius, the founder director of Sport Concussion in South Africa. Thanks so much for joining us.